Alan Quinn Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3, for Spring Semester 2017. Lecture 6, delivered on February 8, 2017. The title of this lecture is Present Value and Future Value.
Today, present value and future value. Now, this is a compact lecture. It's important for work later in the course. And this gives you a taste of math in the finance world. It's not all that difficult. And it's made a lot easier because we have financial calculators now. One thing that I will tell you is, from what I understand, in your accounting classes, you use tables to find present values and future values. Am I correct about that? Yeah. Well, we made it to the 19th century and we kind of got into the 20th century here in finance. We don't use tables anymore. We just use stupid calculators to do it. So if you still have your tables and all that, well, burn them. Well, no, you might want to take some more finance courses, so don't burn them. But I'll tell you a couple of things here real quick to start this out. There is a financial calculator that is in your Pearson My Finance lab. And it's it's not bad, although the one you'll see, sometimes it gets confused and starts having numbers, overlapping numbers, weird stuff like that. But it's actually kind of a decent little calculator. And there's an app that you can download, a free version and a paid version of it. Now, I personally find those apps to be really annoying because they've got this giant blue button at the bottom, video tutorials. It's sort of like you can't get rid of it. It's like having your car's manual pasted to the windshield forever. Once you get used to an app, you don't need a giant button there to keep begging for help from. So I'm not a big fan of their app, and I've told them that, and they don't give a crap because they think they know better than the teachers do. But I also am going to show you something else here, too. This is the Pearson Finance app. I do want to show you, though, something. Well, seriously? Oh, there it is. Okay. This one online here, this is an emulator of the TI-83 calculator. 83, 84, the Inspire, they all work the same. Interestingly enough, professional finance people actually kind of like this calculator. TI, it's a scientific calculator, but it has all of these apps for finance. And the flow of how you put things into this calculator, there's just something about it that's elegant, and it's been around for decades, this calculator has. And so just really quick, and you don't have to write this down yet if you don't want to, but I'm going to show you. I can go apps, finance, the TVM solver is the time value of money solver. That's the one we use a lot, and you're going to see me go back and use a couple of the other apps. But I can put in the number of years. Let's say I want to know for 20 years if I am putting in, let's say the interest is compounded semi-annually for 20 years, then I would want to put in 20 times 2. You don't have to hit equals. Whoops. I was just testing you there. Times 2. And let's say that the annual interest rate is 10%. So we would, if it's 2 times a year, we do 10 divided by 2. And let's say that you are going to get $1,000 a year for those 20 years. And it's going to come at the end of every year, so you want to make sure of that. You can go up and find out what the present value, the now value of that money is. In other words, what would you accept now instead of $1,000 a year for 20 years compounded at 10% semi-annually. And if you just say alpha solve on the calculator, alpha solve, you would take $17,159.09 about instead of the $1,000 annuity. And that's what it's called. It would be, that's a level annuity. So in other words, a little more than 17 grand right now is about the same as $1,000 a year for 20 years, interest 10% compounded semi-annually. That's what it says. Now, I'll do more of these, and I'm doing that thing where I'm sneaking things in on you so you can see how, before I actually show you, you can see a problem. But, I mean, notice how elegant it is. It's actually, the TI-83 is a 84 in the pluses and the Inspire. They just have a nice flow to them. But nonetheless, oh, by the way, if you have one of these calculators, if in the upper right-hand corner of the calculator you see a button that says no, that means that you've got your calculator upside down. Look, I tried it every... It doesn't even... Oh, the hell with it. Anyway, oh, bite me. Okay, so there we go. Now, the Pearson version of the calculator, it's not too much worse for this, and it's probably easier if you get into what are called non-level cash flows. In other words, if the cash flow isn't the same every year, you can still do it on TI-83, but probably the Pearson is going to be a little bit smoother to get to your answer, even though it's a little bit finicky and fussy about things like this. But nonetheless, one way or the other, the two calculators, you can use either one. There's a BA2, which is a little bit on the gamey side. It's a little touchy, but it is so darn cheap. You can buy a BA2 and get this done as well. One way or the other, a warning to you about doing calculations in finance. Don't round until you are finished, because rounding errors accumulate. Seriously, and that's why people are forever bitching at me, because I've set this up in your online problem so that if you get more than a few cents off or a few percent basis points off, you get an answer wrong. And the reason for that is simply this. If you get an interest rate wrong, I just missed it by a tenth of a percent. Why are you having a fit about that? Well, a tenth of a percent, if you're managing a $100 million portfolio, that can add up to $1 million. And then that's really, really going to hurt when they take it out of your paycheck. So, in fact, interestingly enough, there are several studies that have been done where researchers have gone in and looked at financial arrangements that have been made with people, car loans, home loans, things like that. And they find out that they found that in some banks, as much as 60% of the loans are miscalculated. And almost always they're miscalculated to the disadvantage of the borrower. That would be you, strangely enough. So there is an importance. And if we ever get back to an era when banks are held to account, the huge banks are, there could be huge, enormous, staggering fines involved. Well, I'm not going to turn that off right now. But I'm going to leave those up there for a while. But just to emphasize I showed you the formula the last time, that future value equals present value times 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the number of periods. So in other words, you have to be careful. Is this annual, semi-annual, quarterly? So you're going to be given an interest rate that is annual, okay? You're going to be given an interest rate. That's the way we always express it, is annually. Okay, and then from there, if there is something unusual about it, then we would correct it. I wish this marker isn't all the greatest, but anyway, we would correct it. By, say, if it's semi-annual, we take the annual interest rate divided by 2. But you also have to raise the number of periods to twice as many, because there will be that many other periods. Now, I can turn this around and find out what a present value is quite easily. If I divide both sides by 1 plus r to the nth, I get the present value. to set fast. And honestly, once you get the hang of this, looking this up on a table is ridiculous. Because a scientific calculator will do this just fine. Beware of business calculators because they don't understand hierarchy of arithmetic operations. Now, you'll see me do this formula a little bit differently quite often. Because I will do PV, and I apologize for how weak this. PV, seriously? Equals F. Oh, this is fading out. You wait. Don't move. Don't go anywhere. I need a marker. Anyone got a marker? No, seriously, I had one in here and it's gone now. Present value. Oh, look at that. Oh, yeah. The negative exponent is the same as the reciprocal of the thing to the positive exponent. You'll see me tending to do it this way more on scientific calculators just because I keep the flow cleaner and I don't have to worry about a denominator forgetting to put in parentheses or something like that. But these are the formulas for a lump sum of money, taken forward or taken backward. So I did one with future value, but let's say this. You have a dream of retiring someday. Now, your retirement dream is modest. You like to have a house trailer in Decatur. You know, maybe a couple of cars up on cinder blocks and a fence with beer cans along it. Yes, we all have these dreams. Okay, so you're figuring by the time you retire, if you are going to even have a hope of finding a significant other who will be willing to put up with that redbird cap of yours, you need $1 million. Okay? What I'm showing you here is, by the way, the beginnings of financial planning. This is what we do in financial planning. So if you're interested in that major, talk to me because we have a financial planning institute. And a lot of what we do is construct the means by which people can get to their financial goals. Now, suppose that we are financial planners. We say, okay, you need $1 million. And you're asking me how much you'd have to put in now in order for you to retire in 30 years. And we know that there is an investment you can put money into. If you just put a lump of money in there and leave it alone, it will pay you 8% compounded semi-annually. So the question would be, how much would you have to put in now? What present value would you want to have in the bank to create a future value of $1 million? Okay? Simple. It's simple. We can just say, all right, the present value would be the $1 million future value times 1 plus 8%, 0.08, over 2 to the negative 30 times 2. Notice that I have the periodic interest rate is not 8%, it's 4% twice a year. The number of compounding periods is the 30 years times 2 compoundings a year. So you always have to remember to do that. Don't forget to do that. But I'm going to say something else here. So all I have to do is crank this. Did that TI calculator turn itself off? Why? No, seriously, it turned itself off. No, think about it. Why would a calculator online turn itself Oh, well, anyway, that's way above my pay grade, what's going on there. Okay, so a million times, open parentheses, 1 plus 0.08 divided by 2, close the parentheses, to the, open parentheses, negative 30 times 2. Now, you probably could figure that top out by yourself. You don't need to be as expansive as I am. The fewer keystrokes you do, the less likely you are to make a mistake. But that interior there, unless you know what the finite decimal is, just have the calculator do it. Like I said, rounding is your worst enemy. You round, and a couple of steps later, you're going to find that your answer is off by enough that you get it wrong in the My Finance Lab materials. Okay, now. $95,060.40. Yeah. Okay. Now, notice that is actually not that horrible. But, of course, one of the things that we have to deal with in financial planning is making sure that our clients stay disciplined. If we say, you have to put this money in the bank now and never touch it, or you have to put this much money in the bank every month and never play with that money and do something with it, we have to make sure they don't go in there and see that money somewhere along the way and decide that they're going to do something stupid with it, because that's how they ruin their financial planning goals. I mean, you guys are in a very difficult situation. The truth of the matter is, and there are a lot of people who are going to laugh at this, and I might have already brought this up to you, a very reputable financial planner was worked out the amount of money that you would need, you, as your age, about 20 to 21 years old for most of you, how much you would need in order for you to retire at the age of 72 and have enough money to live to the age of about 100, which is what most of you, well, some of you are obviously not going to make it anywhere close to that, but a lot of you are. And so the number was just jaw-dropping. Now, I had enough respect for him that I didn't say, you're full of crap. But a lot of people were, you don't know what you're talking about. I went through his numbers. He's pretty much dead on. He said, for you, at 72, you will need to have clear assets of about $31 million. I kid you not. And that he's not joking. That is about it. I went through his numbers, and I had come up with numbers sort of like that myself long ago, and I was just shaking my head. It is going to be a hard row. I mean, you don't have to have that much. There are a lot of, I mean, you can sell kidneys well into your 80s. You can eat cat food. It's very nutritious. I recommend Fancy Feast. My cats really like the tuna primavera. But if you want to be comfortable, and I'm not jesting about this, you guys are in a really bad position. For me, it's bad enough. If I ever retired, it would be about $15,000 a year I'd have to live on. And for you, that's the problem, is if you don't plan ahead, or if you have some financial catastrophe happen and you can't recover, well, there you go. That's going to be a very difficult thing. And at the age of 75, it's going to be very hard for you to sell your body on the streets of New Orleans. Okay. But that's just me being kind of picky. Enough of that one. But now you got the idea. This is the beginning of financial planning, starting to set up and prepare yourself for things that you want to do down the road. Now let's go on. What I gave you here was what's called a lump sum cash flow. It's called lump sum. The present value of a lump sum, the future value of a lump sum. I gave you those two formulas, okay? All right, let me write that one. Now here's the present value of a lump sum over there, and here's the future value of a lump sum. I gave both of these, okay? So now the next thing that comes up is, okay, we more typically will deal, although these are realistic, we will more typically deal with something called an annuity. An annuity is a stream of cash over a period of time. A level annuity is a one that has the same amount of money each time. So in other words, if this is 0 year 1, year 2, year 3, year four, and we're going to say $500, $500, $500, $500. This would be a level annuity. Because it's the same amount. If there was like a 500, 600, 500, 500, then it would be a non-level annuity. Or just a plain annuity. I'd be a little careful because saying annuity, almost always there's an implication that you're referring to a level annuity. Now, the next thing about this one is this is an annuity that is ordinary. That's different from saying level. Ordinary means that the cash flows occur at the end of each period. You saw in that TI-83 that it had end and begin. That is saying, okay, end is ordinary. If the cash flows are at the start of the period, here's another one. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. And we got 800, 800, 800, and 800. This is an annuity due, and this is a level annuity due. If the cash flows begin at the beginning of the period, just watch it. When do the cash flows start? And that will tell you what to say to your calculator to get the thing done. By the way, if you don't, how many of you have a TI-83? Do you have? It's so common. I mean, a lot of times you just bring one from high school or you've had one for your math classes. So if you don't have one, you can online, what you can do, is just go to a site, just type in Google TI-83 emulator. And it will download a little app that will create a synthetic TI-83 on your calculator. That's what you're seeing there is an emulator. It turned off again. Okay. Now, anyhow, so now we can talk about future values and present values of annuities. This is the basis of how we figure out loans for you. So now we can talk in terms of, okay, I'm going to look at someone who's going to give me something that's a fairly modest. What kind of car do you like, ma'am?
Audi.
Audi. I suppose an A6 or an A8, right? Not an A4. The A4 is a dinky little thing, but you get up to an A, you know, one of those A8s. Darn, those are nice. Okay. Let's be a little more modest than that. No, I was looking at Audis, and I decided, nope, not in this lifetime. So I got a nice Mitsubishi Outlander. Madam?
Mustang.
Oh. Okay, fine. Fine, no. Actually, let's do this. I'm tired of living modestly. Let's live large. Okay. I don't know if I had mentioned it. I was in a... when I was traveling with the crazy crowd, they had BMWs that were like nothing you see in this country. You know, BMWs look kind of boxy. These were like ultimate sports cars, and they had them. And that was the one I was in that night. The one crazy mofo decided he was going to outrun highway patrolmen on the Florida interstate just for the giggles of it. Are you nuts? Where am I? Oh, I want to do this. Here's what I'm going to do, okay? Okay. Let's see if we can get a price on one of these. What is the price? Where? Over here? Whoa, look at that horsepower. What do you need that for? Okay, 25, 185. Okay. No, seriously, who needs that much horsepower? Okay, 25, 185. Actually, that's not bad, but that's probably one, if you want a steering wheel, you got to pay more. Okay. Let's say that with tax and title, you can work out the deal so it's $26,000 out the door. $26,000 out the door. Okay? No, $26,000 out the door. Now, you want to finance this. Let's say you finance this for 5 years, APR is 5.89%, monthly payments, let's see what your payments are going to be. We can do it now. It's actually easy. I'll show you on both calculators how to do this. Now, I will immediately tell you that I might be a little rusty on. This is really weird. Okay, let's turn it on. Okay, now, apps, finance, TVM solver. Okay, so now watch. 5 years times 12 months per year. Down. 5.89, and remember, with these financial calculators, you just put in the percentage, okay? If you're doing real math, you have to use a decimal. You have to use the real deal. But if you're doing a financial app, it's almost always going to be the percentage. So I'm going to do 5.89 divided by 12. Now, the, yeah?
Are you just making up, like, the interest rate?
It's right there. Yeah, I just pulled them out. No, actually, I didn't. Because I just got a car recently. And so I'm giving you kind of close to what would be a typical one. Now, I think the APRs, you can probably, I mean, most of you are, the guy saw a sucker in me or something. I don't know what it was. But you can probably get a better APR than that, but it wasn't too bad. Okay, so now the price value, you always with present value, you put it in negative. I don't know why that is. They always come out negative. You always put them in negative. It's been that way since these financial calculators started showing up in the early 1980s. I don't know what it is, but you always have to put it in as a negative. Negative 26,000. Now let's get. Now we can just go down. We'll come back up to the payment. Make sure that it's on end because your first payment is going to come at the end of the month. So let's figure out what annuity, level annuity cash flow payment over 60 months is going to create $26,000 at 5.89 compounded monthly. So now all we do is we just say alpha solve, $501.32. That's kind of steep, okay? But this is exactly how you can calculate your affordability. You can figure out right when you go in how much car you can afford. Okay, I can handle a $400 a month car payment. Well, let's say that you can afford a $400 a month car payment, okay? Put in $400 and then go up here and say, what's the present price value I can afford? Alpha solve. I can afford a $20,745 car. Now, that's one of the things that you can do when you go into a dealership. You can just say, I must have a payment no more than this. And then you say, that means, with your APRs that you're posting here, that means that out the door, tax and title, this is what we have to get to as far as the price. You can do that with the car salesman. Just say, look, I can't go above 400. You have to find a way to make this happen. Out the door, tax and title and everything. And some fuzzy dice for the rearview mirror. $400. You have to find $20,745.06. Okay, so here's your first practical use of this. Now we can do this for something a little more ambitious. Okay. You, sir, where is your dream home going to be? Where is your first home going to be?
Somewhere
Yeah, I know, right? You're thinking about this weather, yeah. Well, the problem is, here's something about warm. Everyone else wants warm, so that means that you're going to be living with a lot of assholes, okay? And also, bugs like warm. And lizards and insects like warm. When I was out in the deserts in Texas, they had animals that should not even be, they somehow made it through the Pleistocene, and they were hanging around trying to eat us. What the hell is that thing? And, you know, knock it off. That's just a little, you know, a little spider. Yeah, okay. Anyway. What would you say would be the price of your first home? Oh, dude, not for your first home. My God. You're living beyond your means. Yeah, we'll give it to you. We'll give it to you, okay? We'll do it. So let's say that we are going to put a down payment on your... So we'll say we're going to put 10% down on 100, let's say 200,000. Net, you need to borrow $180,000 at an interest rate of 5.25% on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. Okay? I'm using the actual terminology here. It's better if you see me use it instead of talking in kiddie language to you. Just here's what we do. Here's how we do it. This is finance. This is actually, in a way, it's the fun finance, because you're actually thinking, doing things that you should be able to use at some point. Okay, so now, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to figure out what your payments are. So we're going to come back up here. This is going to be 30 years at 12% on a 5.25% divided by 12 months per year on a present value of negative $180,000. And there at the end of the year, just be careful which way you do it. Look at the problem to see whether the cash flows begin now or at the end. Okay, so they do. So let's we're okay here. And now let's do alpha solve. $993.97, okay? Now here's the next thing that you would want to do, and I'm now talking to you. One of my specializations, field specializations, was real estate and urban studies finance. And it's actually one of the more interesting fields in finance. And the next thing that you would want to do here is to say, all right, many lenders will look at your credit history, yes, but what they'll also do is they'll look at the affordability index for you. This payment for a lender would probably, they would not want to see this payment more than 25% of your take-home pay every month. Now, there are a lot of other ways they could say, take away your bills, 33%. But let's say that we want this payment of $994, and we'll just round it here, $994 is 25% of what take-home pay per month. It's going to be a little bit shy, and then I can come out of this and just simply do a little bit of algebra here, and I can just simply say, all right, 994 divided by 0.25. So you better go into that lender with a check stub that shows $3,976 of take-home. That's what it's going to be. You follow with me? So that means, yeah, go ahead. Oh, that was 5.25%. I said the APR is going to be 5.25% per year. So you always divide it by 12 months per year because your payments will be monthly. Say that again. Oh, a fixed rate mortgage. It's an FRM. In other words, I don't know if you know the difference. A fixed rate mortgage, your interest rate stays the same over the life of the loan. A variable rate mortgage, the interest rate changes. It starts out very low, and then they start to screw you. Do not ever get a variable rate or an adjustable rate mortgage. You will start out, they will start you out with what's called a teaser rate, 2.8%. Now, who would not want a loan for 30 years at 2.8%? Well, you see, what they're going to do is they're just going to, as soon as they can jack it up, they're going to jack it up, and they're going to screw you. So I always talk about fixed rate mortgages, okay? There. Now, that's that one. And now you can begin to sort of create, see what we do in finance, in financial planning, is we figure out things like this. Now, here's one that's the next one to do. I've been doing present value ones. You're getting $26,000 now. You're getting $180,000 now to buy something. Let's talk about the flip side, where we would be talking about something that would happen in the future. You, sir, have just found out that you are going to be a daddy. You're looking very steely-eyed. You keep that until you get in the bathroom, and then you kill yourself, okay? But you're trying to think, okay. I can handle this. This is going to be good. Okay, I'm going to make this kid... This kid's going to have everything that I didn't have. And one of those things is he's going to have a college education without $5 billion worth of student loans at the end of it. But you're planning ahead. So what you want to do is you're thinking, okay, you come to me as a financial planner and you say, I would like, starting when this child is born, I want to put money into an account once every year so that the last payment comes in on his 17th birthday, and then that payment rides. And on his 18th birthday, I give him the savings account for his college education or for his meth habit, whatever. You know. But that's one of the things we actually do talk about. How you keep kids from blowing the money once you give it to them. Controlling that flow that comes out. Don't be stupid. Don't give the kid that actual. But we're setting this up, okay, so that you can see how it works. In this case, what's going to happen, and by the way, what I'm showing you here, it looks like it's something I'm showing you as a crutch. I do this too. I draw timelines. And it just helps me understand what I'm doing. Okay. Now, in this case, I'm going to put money in and I'm going to keep putting these payments in every year, and it's going to be the same amount. And then I'm going to stop, and then I want to know how much money will be in the account. I want this money in the account at the end. Now, let's say that in order for a child to go to a good school, let's say a private school, only because otherwise the kid might run into me here and you really don't want that experience again for another kid, okay? So you're going to say, we'll put him into a private school. We want enough so that he can have the money for a four-year education at a private school of good quality, and that would probably be about $250,000 in 18 years. So we're going to do $250,000 out here. And let's say, and I'm a financial planner, I say, okay, I can probably get you, if you don't touch the money, let me guarantee you, if you do touch the money, you will get an interest penalty that will make your head spin, okay? Seriously, I can work it out so that you have got 6.2% for the money that you're putting in there. If you ever touch that money, we'll take a lot of that interest away from you. We will punish you for that. Okay, so now, here's what we're going to do. Yep, it turned off again. We're going to put in 18 years. Now, there's no compounding. It's annual, okay? And our APR is 6.2%.
Right.
This time, the present value... Whoops, I didn't mean to do that well. The present value, there's no present value because we want something at the end. Specifically, what we want at the end is $250,000. And then, yes.
So if it gives you APR, you just take the
how many payments a year? That'll. Yeah. The APR, if in this case, the payments were going to happen annually. So there's just divided by one.
But then if it just said like a certain percent with X amount of years, you just do divide by the total, right?
Damn. Yeah, no, because it's monthly payments. They were monthly. So divided by 12. But here, the payments are annual. So it'd just be divided by one. I should actually kind of say it that way, I suppose. But yeah, now I understand. Yeah, what you're asking. But yeah, it's driven by the number of payments a year. Most consumer loans are 12 months monthly payments. There are a few consumer loans that have odd patterns. For example, you can actually get mortgages now where the payments are biweekly or semi-monthly. In other words, there would be two payments every month for the life of the loan. Let me tell you, those loans actually, in the early years, it doesn't really do much. But out there a little farther, those loans amortize a lot faster if you've got like semi-monthly or bi-weekly payments. The only problem is that puts a lot more pressure on you to keep your cash flow up. Losing a job, you're in a lot of trouble with a loan like that. But anyway, there's one last thing here. Do you see that these payments begin at the beginning of every month? Do you see it? Or at the beginning of every year? That's why I draw that timeline. One of the reasons is so I can see, do the payments begin at the end, like most normal loans do? Or in this case, are you planning it so that when the kid is born, you put the first shot in and then you stop putting money in a year before you pull it out? Okay, so in this case, I want to say begin, and then I'm going to go back up here, and I'm going to say, all right, what are my payments going to have to be for this? Alpha, solve, about $7,473.75 every year you have to put in for this to happen. And this is now you're getting even closer to real financial planning. What we do typically is we will talk with the person or the couple or the family. We'll say, all right, what are your significant markers? Okay, we want to be able to buy a new car every 3 years. Okay, done. We want to buy our own home in 5 years. Okay, we'll figure out how much you have to put into the bank every month to have a decent down payment so you can negotiate your APR a little bit. Okay, done. We have, we're planning to have 3 children, and we want to put them all through college. Okay, give me their 8, when you're going to start doing this, and we'll begin to project out our cash flow patterns, how you're going to have to save, and all of this. Okay, we're going to want to have our second home, sell our first home, about 2 years after our second child is born. You can do all of this. It's actually just adding up the numbers from each of the individual annuities. And you'll see in most cases what happens is you look at the cash flow pattern. Here's how much you're going to have to save. And it starts out with small amounts in the first years. And then it gets worse and worse. But this is also when the people should be in their deepest making money parts of their lives. We try to time it so that, good God, there are stories about actually advising people when it's optimal for them to start having kids. You know, that's kind of awkward. You know, well, we think you should, you know, at about 10 years from now, you actually, so that we know they're in the right part of their earnings, life cycle of earnings, when the heaviest impact of putting money into the bank for later will come. And then they can start to slack off as they head for retirement. And at retirement, they have this pile of money. They've taken care of their kids. They got a nice final house. They still have enough money. They can get a car every 3-5 years or whatever. And they got their medical bills covered and all that. That's what this is all about, is just working that kind of stuff out. So if this is interesting to you, this is financial planning, what I'm doing here. And that's why I spend a little time on it, because, like I said, we've got a financial planning institute now where this is your major and this is the career that you would have, is helping people. Unfortunately, the reality of it is that a lot of what you would be doing is helping upper middle class and rich people. Poor people don't have the money to be worth your time. And that is an unfortunate consequence of what we do here, and especially in this kind of stuff. However, we are now finding ways to help people who are much poorer to achieve goals in their lives. The first thing we have to do, there's a program that's out of Peoria, and I've tried to get some people interested in internships in the program, where we actually take people who are very low income, they're working poor, and we teach them rigid, rigorous money budgeting. We go through financial stuff I'm teaching you here, kind of, except, you know, not maybe the math, hard math. But we teach them how to budget, how to plan, how to control themselves so they don't buy stupid things every month or waste their money or give money to someone that's begging them for money. Once we have a sense of certainty that they have a discipline, we then set them up with their own home, owner-occupied housing. And why are we doing that? Well, we know that if you own your own home, you're more likely not to be doing stupid stuff in your own life. You're not going to be in jail because you'll lose your home. We know the people who own their own homes, if they see trouble down the street, they're going to go out and pop a cap in the kid's ass and things like that. They're going to manage their neighborhoods better. So it actually does have long-term benefits, and this program is still going on with what's left of a state grant that'll probably be gone by the end of this year. So there you are on that. Anyway. Next thing. Realistically, I mean, one of the things that you can get, I like to show this from the practical standpoint, from a practical standpoint. Now, you notice that I didn't show you the formula for annuities. I showed you the formula for lump sums, but the formula for annuities, they show it in the book. If you're into that, great. If you're not, you've got the calculators can do this for you. There's a special kind of annuity. Well, actually, there's two, but they're both, they're basically, it's all one formula. This actually goes back to the very first lecture in the course. The reason that you can't talk about a corporation as if it is a living person. Why, at the end of the day, the Supreme Court, in its decision some years back, that corporations enjoy the rights granted to humans, citizens under the Constitution. There's a fundamental reason why we should never think that. It is because a corporation does not die naturally. You, madam, will die. You will die badly. I don't even want to talk, dude. It's going to be nasty. YouTube? I think so. Okay. Now, you will have a good death. Now, I define a good death as, first thing, it should not involve recovering your remains with a shop vac. Okay? It should not be recovering your remains by waiting for a monster to crap out what's left of you. It should not be finding you in a crop circle. None of those are good deaths, but you'll have a good death. You will die. So will you. Now, don't be hurt by this. It is going to happen to all of us. A corporation does not, by definition, have death. It can die by stupidity, by choice, but it does not die of its nature like people and all animals on earth do. What this means is that when we model cash flow behavior by a corporation, we assume, and this is, comes from accounting, the term going concern. In other words, a corporation, if it is in its normal configuration, does not have a finite life. And we form the financial statements on this predicate. It does not have a finite life. And so when we project cash flows, we are actually looking at something that will have cash flow forever. Now, again, the corporation could die by stupidity, by choice, if it chooses to merge or be absorbed by something else, another thing. But it doesn't die on its own. So, in other words, if I were to think of a corporation's value as the present value of all of its future cash flows, all telescope back to here and now, that would be assuming an infinite stream of cash coming back. Present values are essentially just telescoping back everything from the future to a now value, to a value right now, which will be less than just adding them up because money later is worth less than money now. But here's the deal. Here's what this means to us. There's a simple formula. There's a simple formula for this. For a cash flow that is the same forever, we call that a perpetuity. A perpetuity is nothing but an infinite level annuity. A perpetuity is nothing but an infinite annuity. Now, the basic, if it is the same amount of money, if it is a level perpetuity, the present value of it is going to be nothing but the cash flow that is going to be the same every year forever, divided by the discount rate that is appropriate for that cash flow based on its risk. And there happens to be a security that is exactly a perpetuity. An infinite, permanent, same amount of money every year, forever and ever and ever. It's called preferred stock. Because if you buy a share of preferred stock, it is not like common stock. Preferred stock is equity. In other words, it's an owner's position. But the first thing, preferred stock, remember, equity has the residual claim. Debt has the prior claim on cash flows. Equity has a residual claim. So you have debt comes first with a prior claim, and then equity has the residual claim. Now, interestingly enough, though, the preferred would be paid first, its dividend. And then the common stock would get its dividend. Preferred is almost like a bond. It just pays you a dividend every year forever, and it's the same amount. I'll get to that in a minute. This is actually, historically, for people who were retired or wanting to have a fixed income amount of money, we used to recommend buying preferred stock because then they just get the same dividend check every year forever and ever and ever. Of course, inflation could hurt that kind of an investment. But anyway, let me give you AZJ 1.2% Q cumulative preferred par value, $40 per share, what that would mean is the trading symbol is AZJ. That's what the letter designation always means. This is 1.2%. That is a percentage of the par value of the stock. You take the 1.2% times $40, No, that's not right. That's 48 cents, right? Suck at arithmetic. Let me do that real quick here. 0.012 times 40. Yeah, 48 cents. In other words, each share of the stock will pay its holder, its owner, 48 cents a year. Forever. What it also, this, when it says, see, it says cumulative, that means that the common shareholders can never get a dividend unless they not only have the preferred shareholders been paid their dividend, but any back dividends to the preferred shareholders have been made up. You don't have to pay this. The company doesn't have to pay that dividend if it's in bad financial straits. But before it can ever start paying its common shareholders again, it has to catch up on its back dividends to its preferred shareholders. That's what the cumulative means. In other words, this is actually a low-risk stock. This is very low risk. See that 1.2%? That kind of sucks. But at the same time, it's very safe. And it used to be corporations issue preferred stock. You don't see it that much these days, except in real estate. In real estate, it's still very common. Also, what really surprised me was all of these investment companies that build financial products to get brokers to sell to clients, financial planners and all that, they don't do preferred stock. They'll do bizarre twists and turns of high dividend yield, common stocks and bonds and things like that. Anything, but they won't put preferred stock into the mix of products for potential clients. And I finally asked, we were at this place, they were talking about, well, we've got this, we've got brokers who are very big on this one product line we have. We get these high dividend common stocks and we put them in with some bonds to pay coupons, and it's almost like we've got preferred stock. And I just, why don't you have preferred stock? Well, we wouldn't do that. Dude. But anyway, he didn't like me calling him dude. Older guy. But anyway. Okay. That's cumulative preferred. You see that's a level perpetuity? I can figure out what the value of this is. Suppose that the market discounts AZJ preferred at 1.5%. In other words, the market says you should pay 1.5%. Now, this company's preferred is paying only 1.2%. So that means that this stock is going to be punished because it doesn't pay as much as the market thinks its risk indicates that it should. So we can figure out what the price of this stock will be. The price value of this AZJ preferred is going to be 48 cents a share divided by 0.015. Sure enough, it's selling at a discount to par. Do you see? It's selling at $32 a share. It's selling below its par value because it's being punished by the market because it's not paying enough. all there is to it. Nothing really complicated about this. Now, watch what would happen. Let's do one. Suppose that the market thinks that it's paying too much. Market discounts AZJ preferred at 1.0%. In other words, the market thinks that it needs to pay 1%, but it's paying a little more than that, 1.2%. So in this case, we could say, for this one, the present value of AZJ preferred is going to be $0.48 over 0.010. $48. The market's rewarding it a little bit. Go.
What does
the CS stand for? Cash flow. Cash flow. In other words, this is going to be a 48 cent a year cash flow forever. That's all it means. Now, it's level, so I don't have to put cash flow 1, cash flow 2, cash flow 3, because there's just a flat amount. This stock will actually give 0.48. Yeah. That's all it is. Now, there's one twist on this. What if it didn't stay level? But it grew, and it grew in a very regular way. I can show you many companies, when they are paying dividends, they establish a growth rate that they don't change. This is that goes back to that. What I was talking about, you get companies, they say, well, is it time for us to start paying a dividend? Point one that I used to bring up, I said, once you start paying a dividend, you have to keep doing it. Because if you ever stop paying the dividend, you will be punished far worse than if you had never paid them a dividend before. Because once you start paying them a dividend, you are signaling them. You are signaling them that you can do this. And not only that, you should be giving them more every year in a regular fashion so that it is predictable to them. Dividends are actually don't make sense except as signaling devices. Why would a company give money to its shareholders just straight up when it could reinvest it and grow the company for the shareholders? Dividends don't make sense except that they are signals as to how wealthy the company is. It can do this. Years ago, when I was in my heyday of consulting, I did some consulting, and I ended up at a Christmas party for one of the alphabet houses. The alphabet houses were these massive, powerful insurance brokers. They didn't work for insurance companies. They worked for the corporations that needed insurance. They would put together, they would negotiate the whole package of risk indemnifications for massive companies. I went to the Christmas dinner, and it was just lavish. I mean, they had just food everywhere. I was, gathering up, putting it in my pockets and all this kind of stuff. And then the president and CEO comes up to the front of the whole audience. Ting, 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 ting. Everyone, oh, yeah, there he is. Yeah, good man. Oh, real stud. And all this. And he just starts talking about how incredible their year was. The company's revenues were up by almost 100%. They had acquired major new clients in multinational corporations, and they had given out bonuses. And at the end of this, he pulls out a Cuban cigar, and he puts it in his mouth. And then he takes a $100 bill, rolls it up, and he lights it. And then he lights his cigar with the daggone $100 bill. I thought, I'd never seen that before. Then he just tosses a burning $100 bill into an ashtray. And I'm just like, But he did. Why did he do that? Because he could. It was a signal that they had so much money that he could blow money that way. And that's what dividends are. They are a signal. But if you start doing that signal, you better keep doing that signal. So in other words, now, let's take this to the practical end of it. You see, because if the company It's preferred. If it's preferred stock, it's cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. But if it is common stock and there is a dividend, it would be cash flow one, it would be cash flow zero, cash flow one, cash flow two, cash flow three, each one higher than the last one. Now, if it is a constant growth perpetuity, and this goes to the point I was making, once you start paying this dividend, you have to keep paying it, but you also have to grow it. And the best way to grow it is in a consistent manner. I can show you these companies. The growth rate of their dividends is, for a lot of companies, you can predict it. Constant growth rate, G, would be the present value, would be the dividend now, times growth one period over the discount rate minus G. What that means in practice is this. DNL Common just paid a 25-cent per share dividend. That is expected to grow at 5%. The market is discounting DNL cash flow. Cash flows at 8.3%. Let you write that down, and I'm going to show you how to price a stock, price a common stock. We can price the stock, and that's why we as the investors get very, very interested in having companies do things in a consistent manner, because it makes it easier for us to price their securities. And here's what we would do. The present value would be the dividend that they just paid, grown one period. Always make sure that you grow it. If it's the dividend, if I just told you the dividend just paid is, you got to grow it. If it is already out there one period, you don't have to grow it. Let me emphasize that. If it's just the dividend they just paid, you have to grow it one period. If they've already told you the dividend the next period, you don't have to grow it. But then in the denominator, you put 0.083 minus 0.05. And here we go. We have 0.25 times 1.05 divided by 0.083 minus 0.05. It's a $7.95 stock. Per share. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.